So hello, my name is Wen Ting, and I'm a PhD student at Berkeley right now. And today I'll be presenting fast databases with fast durability and recovery through multi-core parallelism. And this was joint work done by MIT and Harvard. Okay, so in-memory databases have become more and more popular in the recent years. They're able to achieve extremely fast transaction processing because all of the data fit inside memory. And some of the examples of these systems are VaultDB and MemSQL. However, in-memory databases have one potential weakness. Because all the data reside in memory, they're not as robust to crashes and power failures as traditional disk-based databases. And for this project, we wanted to design a persistent system for a very extremely fast multi-core in-memory database to achieve two goals. So we want to make sure that there is small performance impact on runtime throughput and latency as opposed to the relative to the original runtime system. And also, we want to be able to recover a big database in just a few minutes. So here were some of the challenges that we faced on the way. Since in-memory databases are generally much faster than disk-based databases, they're able to run transactions extremely fast. So we must design our system carefully so that the persistent system has little interference with the transaction running system, so that the entire system can still maintain high transaction throughput. The second challenge we faced was designing systems so that it actually has fast recovery. From our initial experiments, we just basically started out with serial recovery, and that actually took an extremely long time to recover a medium-sized database. So we were looking into thousands of seconds to just recover a single database, and that was way too long. So we had to design our logging and checkpointing system so that we can facilitate fast parallel recovery. Okay, so we developed SiloR, which is a persistent system on top of very high-performance in-memory database called Silo. And we use classical techniques, so logging, checkpointing, and a recovery using disks. We're not using replication here, and replication alone may not be enough to solve the problem that I proposed. But perhaps more interesting is the fact that we're actually able to achieve these goals by using parallelism in all parts of the system, both during runtime and recovery. Great, so the rest of the talk is structured as follows. So I will first begin with an overview of our base system, Silo. And then I will talk about SiloR's design, which consists of three parts: logging, checkpointing, and recovery, followed by evaluation of our system, and finally, related work and conclusion. Okay, so as I mentioned before, Silo is a very high-performance in-memory database that can run millions of transactions per second, so it's highly parallel. And it has worker threads that run these transactions on a shared memory database on multiple cores. Silo uses optimistic concurrency control to run these transactions, or OCC for short. On this slide, I want to talk a little bit about Silo's transaction ID construction and the idea of epochs. And this will be useful for understanding our persistent system later on. Silo transactions are run in global time periods called epochs. And each epoch is associated with a global epoch number. Each time period is approximately 40 milliseconds long. A single transaction belongs to a single epoch, and we group these transactions, many transactions also into a single epoch. Silo's writes are ordered by their transaction IDs. So if a transaction T2 overrides transaction T1's writes, then T2's TID will be greater than that of T1's TID, that of T1's. But at the same time, within a single epoch, we do not guarantee full serializability based on transaction IDs. Epochs provide group commit for Silo transactions. The construction of TIDs using epoch numbers also help us to avoid conflicts on a global TID counter. And finally, epochs provide a unit for recovery. So we recover entire epochs at a time. For each epoch, it must be recovered entirely or not at all. So with the overview of Silo in mind, let me dive into our SiloR design. And the first part is logging. We were faced with two choices when we started designing logging, so operation logging versus value logging. Operation logging logs the actions performed by transactions, so such as increment key once value by 5, whereas value logging just logs the image of a value. Operation logging's main advantage is that it writes out a smaller log, but it's harder to parallelize during recovery because operations need to be serialized. Value logging, on the other hand, usually produces a larger log size, but it's very easy to parallelize during recovery. For SiloR, we decided to use value logging, and this is an example of recovery driving the runtime persistence system design. And as I'll show later in the evaluation section, we're able to use value logging with small degradation in the runtime throughput and latency. Because of Silo's high transaction throughput, a single disk was simply not enough to keep up with all the I/O that we were outputting. So we used multiple disks for logging. We made a design decision to have one logger thread per disk. And since we have fewer disks than cores, we designate multiple workers to a single logger. We use this design because having worker threads do the logging themselves could potentially slow down transaction processing. And with our current design, we only let the worker threads do a tiny bit of work for logging, and the rest logging is handled by the special logger threads. And this is simply a visualization of what our logging structure looks like. So we have workers on the top, and then multiple workers write into communicate with a single logger, and we have one logger per disk. As I mentioned before, workers only do a little bit of work for logging, so the workers write out log records to these buffers and then hand these buffers to the loggers. The loggers then group these buffers together and write out to disk. The logger threads manage log files in such a way so that log truncation can be easily performed. So once every C epochs, we rename the old log file to a new file called named olddata.e, where e is the largest epoch seen in that particular file. And with our and then we just go ahead and open a new file and continue to flush out the buffer to this new file. So with this naming scheme, it actually makes log truncation very easy to perform, as I will show later on in the slides. So as previously mentioned, epochs provide serializability, and we make transactions persistent one epoch at a time. So how do we actually know when a transaction is persistent? So our system calculates a persistence epoch, as shown on the slide. So it's the EP on the bottom. The workers publish epoch information E, and in the diagram shown here, it's E1 through E4. And the worker, each worker guarantees that all future log records that it sends to the logger will have epochs greater than or equal to the published E. And after synchronization, the loggers simply use the epoch information published by the workers to take the minimum of these epochs, minus one, to get the persistence epoch EP. And this EP tells us that all transactions in epochs less than or equal to EP have been made persistent to disk. And we use this information EP to tell whether a transaction is persistent. The second part of our system is checkpointing. So it's actually sufficient to recover correctly just from log records, but checkpointing is necessary because we would like to recover in a bounded amount of time. Similar to our logging system, our checkpointing system also runs in parallel. So we perform parallel checkpointing because, again, one disk's I/O was simply not enough to checkpoint the entire database in a reasonable amount of time. So we have multiple checkpoint threads running. And similar to the loggers, then we have each checkpoint thread writing out to a single disk. And the checkpoint threads share the disks with logger threads. The checkpoints happen on a regular basis. So infrequent checkpointing means that we'll do log truncation less frequently and we'll accumulate more logs this way, and then that will lead to a longer recovery time. So ideally, we'd like to take the checkpoints as frequently as possible. And in our system right now, we start the next checkpoint very soon after the previous checkpoint finished, so with only a 10-second sleep in between. Checkpoint threads perform tree walks over all of the tables and write out key value pairs into the checkpoint file. So we produce an inconsistent checkpoint using this scheme. We only write out committed records in our checkpoints because Silo uses optimistic concurrency control, and so only the committed records are reflected in the trees. Similar to logging, we design the checkpoint with recovery in mind. During the tree walk, each checkpoint thread writes out key value pairs to multiple files, and this allows the checkpoint recovery to easily recover using many threads. Many more threads than what was used during the actual checkpoint period. So now with some more details about the checkpoint. Each checkpoint starts in Epic EL. In Silo R, as I mentioned before, we take an inconsistent checkpoint. So as we're walking over the trees, we're missing some of the updates that happen during this checkpoint period. This means that while we can truncate logs in epics less than EL, we can't truncate any log records with epics greater than or equal to EL. So therefore, we actually take advantage of this, and we minimize the amount of data put into the checkpoint files by skipping over records that were modified in epics after epics greater than or equal to EL. And by skipping these records, we're able to reduce the amount of information put into the checkpoint files than a naive checkpoint scheme that simply checkpoints all the records it encounters. This means that we'll have a shorter checkpoint period. We're able to run the checkpoint more often, perform log truncation more often, have a smaller log, and faster recovery. A checkpoint ends in Epic EH. After the tree walks are done, we must wait until all of the checkpointed records are persistent. So as mentioned before, these records are committed records, but they must be considered persistent for us to recover correctly because we don't perform undo during log recovery. Therefore, we perform this wait until EH is less than or equal to EP. After this wait, we perform cleanup and log truncation. So log truncation simply removes all log files with epic less than EL. And this is safe because all the changes in epics less than EL will already be reflected in the checkpoint itself. Okay, so the third part of our system is recovery. Recovery parallelism is very easy for our system because of the way we design our logging and checkpointing schemes. Recovery happens in two parts. First one is checkpoint recovery, and the diagram shows a rough structure of our recovery scheme. So during the checkpoint, a single checkpoint thread rolled out to multiple files on the same disk. And during checkpoint recovery, we're able to use many more threads to recover these files. So we have one checkpoint recovery thread recovering each checkpoint file. And thread simply goes through the list of key value pairs present in the file and inserts them into the appropriate tree. So this is a very easy, easy process. Log recovery structure is similar to the diagram shown on the previous slide, except we have one log recovery thread in charge of a set of log files. Since we use value logging, we don't have to reorganize or reorder the log files in any way to recover them in parallel. These files can be replayed in any order, and we just have to guarantee that the log record with the highest TID per key wins. Now, that being said, we actually do partially reorder the files backwards using the epic information in the file names. So we replay the log files in later epics first. And this change reduces the amount of replay updates needed for a particular key if that key was modified multiple times, especially in different epics. During log recovery, we don't recover any log record that happened after the persistent epic EP. This is crucial for correctness because we can't guarantee that group commit has finished for those epics. And any record with greater epics must be for an uncommitted transaction. Okay, so now I'll present an evaluation of our system. So this is the experiment setup we have. We ran benchmarks on a single machine with 32 physical cores. Each machine has 256 gigabytes of RAM. We use 4 disks, 3 Fusion I/O drives, and 1 RAID 5 disk array. So here are the questions that we want to answer. Can Silo R keep up with the high transaction throughput from Silo? And also, does recovery take no more than a few minutes for a large database? So we ran two benchmarks. The first one is YCSBA. This is a key value benchmark with 70% read and 30% write. We ran the system with 28 workers, 4 loggers, and 4 checkpoint threads. And YCSB, for this particular benchmark, the database size does not grow as the benchmark runs. Okay, so this is a diagram of our, or this is a graph of our results. So the red line shows Silo R's performance, which is Silo with both logging and checkpointing enabled. The green line is log Silo, so that's only with logging enabled. And finally, the blue line is mem Silo, so that's no persistence. Note that we're running, and finally, the gray region indicates the checkpoint periods. So memsilo is actually running with 32 workers because we're dedicating 4 cores to the persistent system for silo R and log silo. So without persistent system, we would have used all 32 cores to run the transactions. So we do suffer some throughput degradation because we're designating some cores just for persistence. But if you look at the performance for silo R and log silo, you can see that checkpointing does not actually hurt the performance that much with respect to logging. And on the bottom, you can see the actual average throughput numbers. We tested recovery by simulating a crash right before the second checkpoint completes, so before the new checkpoint files are installed, and also before log truncation can be performed. This is a kind of worst case scenario for recovery because we're recovering the maximum amount of log records, 2 checkpoint periods worth of logs. And here you can see the performance numbers that we have. So we were able to recover a 43.2 gigabyte database from a 36 gigabyte checkpoint, a 64 gigabyte log, and the checkpoint recovery took 33 seconds. Log recovery takes longer, and it took 73 seconds, and the total amount of time was 106 seconds, so just under 2 minutes. The second benchmark we ran was TPCC, and TPCC is a popular OLTP benchmark. It's very write heavy. Again, we ran it with 28 workers, 4 loggers, and 4 checkpoint threads. For TPCC, the difference between TPCC and YCSB is that TPCC's database size actually grows very fast as we're running the transactions. And so the checkpoint period also grows along with the database size. So here you can see, again, we're presenting the red line is silo R, green line is log silo, and the light purple line is mem silo. And the gray regions, again, indicate the checkpoint periods, and the periods are getting longer because the database size is also increasing. Here we're actually using 28 workers for mem silo because there was no significant performance gain in this case from running TPCC with 32 workers. On the bottom, you can see the average throughput numbers, again, for these graphs. And for CPC, all three graphs are actually relatively close to each other in terms of performance. So the graph for silo R is a little bit spikier than before because TPCC is, again, very write-intensive, so it's writing out a lot of log records. And with checkpointing added to the system, we're actually stressing our disks a lot to their limits. Testing recovery for TPCC, again, similar to what we did for YCSB, except this time we simulate a crash right before the fourth checkpoint completes. So it includes the log records from third checkpoint and also the fourth checkpoint. Again, this is a worst case scenario for log recovery. And so the numbers are on here. We recovered 72.2 gigabytes of tuples. We recovered this from 15.7 gigabyte of checkpoint and 180 gigabytes of logs. So again, TPCC is writing out a lot of logs. And the checkpoint recovery finished in 17 seconds. Log recovery was in 194 seconds. And the total recovery took 211 seconds, which is under 4 minutes. So with these results in mind, let me come back to the questions we wanted to answer. So can Silo keep up with high transaction throughput from Silo? And does recovery take no more than a few minutes for a large database? And our answer was yes. So Silo R was able to actually have fast recovery without giving up too much on the runtime performance. Okay, so finally, some related work. So there has been some related work done on for in-memory database recovery. This is only a partial list. I'm going to just very quickly talk about the first two. So first one, VaultDB OLTP recovery using command logging. This paper shows command operation logging is faster than value logging during runtime. And they were also able to show that operation logging is parallelizable. But VaultDB is also different from our system. VaultDB is a partitioned database, and we are a single machine shared memory database. Second one is RAMCloud. So RAMCloud is a distributed storage system that has just absolutely phenomenal recovery speed. It's able to recover large database in just a few seconds. But again, RAMCloud is different from our system because it's a distributed system, whereas we're a single machine shared memory database. So we're using different techniques to try to achieve similar goals as RAMCloud. There is more related work, which you can see in our paper. So in conclusion, we designed and implemented a persistent system for a very fast multi-core in-memory database. And we were able to show that we can achieve a small degradation in runtime performance from the base system, and also recovery of a large database in a few minutes by using parallelism in all parts of our system. And the takeaway here is that we discover you can design persistent system with fast recovery without giving up too much runtime performance. Okay, and with that, I would like to conclude the talk, and I'll be happy to take questions.
Mark Lubridge from HP Labs. So normally databases use stable storage for logging and checkpoints, which is to say they can take a single point of failure, so like mirror things at the very least. What happens to your performance if you do that?
Right, so our system, again, is a single machine system, and we're not doing replication of any
source right now.
You
should be replicating the logs and the checkpoints.
Right, so that's one thing that we would love to explore in the future, how the system would perform once we add replication to the system. Yeah, so right now we are only working with persistent storage. Yeah, thank you for the question. Yes.
Hi, Brad Morey, also from HP Labs. So this is really cool work. Good job.
Thank
nice
you.
Continuation of the work out of the PDOS lab. You evaluated the rate at which you can do recovery and the rate at which you can do transactions with persistence. I did a little math on the slide. It looked like your rate per core is slightly lower for doing transactions than the mem silo. So that's mm-hmm. one question, if you could comment on the different, it's like, I don't know.
Do you mean silo R with respect to?
Yeah, so you compare your rate for silo R mm-hmm. and your rate for mem silo per core, and your silo R is lower. That was one question, and the second was.
Okay. So I think that would make sense because memsilo, we're not running any persistence. So we consider the transaction to be committed as soon as, you know, the transaction finishes. Whereas for silo R, we do have to, flush things to disk and then, we have to calculate persistence epoch. And after the epoch is persistent, all transactions in the epochs smaller than or equal to the epoch have been made persistent. So there is some extra work we're doing. And also, especially for YCSB, again, we're running memsilo with 32 workers, whereas we're, kind of taking out these four cores
was the number that I was asking about. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So there is some extra work it's doing because the workers are, transferring the buffers to the logger. So it's doing a little bit of extra work. But I think overall, I think we were able to show that we had only a small degradation in runtime performance.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
So the second question was around the persistence engine. You can go first. I'll wait. You can go first.
No, continue.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So you use three Fusion I/O cards and a RAID array, but you're not really reporting on the bandwidth you're getting out of those things either while you're doing the transactions or during recovery. So it's difficult to predict what would happen if I had a much faster I/O subsystem, or in contrast, a much slower one. Like, can you comment on, like, what was the bottleneck when you were doing recovery? Was the were the recovery threads pinned? Were you were the I/O subsystem pinned? And how much if you know anecdotally how much bandwidth you're using out of things?
I do believe we have some numbers in the paper, but for our recovery system, so we are actually we didn't want to be I/O bound, and that was why we were doing we were using multiple disks in the first place, because if we were using a single disk, we would certainly be I/O bound for the system. And so right now we are. I guess CPU bound, and we are using all cores to recover as fast as possible. I do believe that there is still room for improvement in terms of recovering even faster.
Sure.
But I think we also did show that we achieved our goals, and recovery or failures are rare, and we're able to recover in a reasonable amount of time.
Sure. Thanks. So, good job.
Thank you.
Final question.
Just one. Quick question. So I'm Yang Zhang from New York University. Mm-hmm. So why do you prefer to do inconsistent checkpointing? I believe you can just replace the logs and get a consistent checkpoint. Thank you.
So we want to perform checkpointing, first of all, so that we can actually truncate the logs. Because if we recover only from logs, then that would take a very long period of very very long time to actually recover a database. So we're doing an inconsistent checkpoint instead of a consistent checkpoint, because there is some memory overhead associated with checkpointing out a consistent checkpoint. So we figured this way was faster and. Yeah, and perform well. So
great. Let's thank our speaker.
All right. Thank you very much.